Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number. Not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Halliburton. He'll take it. He'll backpedal a 3 for the win. And go!
Well, that was the scene Wednesday night as the Indiana Pacers pulled off the shocking comeback against the New York Knicks. They, of course, won in overtime as the Halliburton shot at the buzzer was not a three-pointer as he thought, but it was an iconic moment in one of the NBA's great rivalries. And that's where we will begin the new edition of the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Armand Brody. Please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. So let's just get started with the Pacers-Knicks series. Game 1 was a classic, and it was the most watched Game 1 of an Eastern Conference final in 7 years since LeBron James last played in the East. Now, this is a good number, no question. Third largest audience for a conference final opener since 2019. Though I would say I was a bit surprised that the number for that game did not have a 7 in front of it. I had said on social media that I thought it would be around where it ended up, around 6 million. But watching the game and obviously seeing how it played out, I would have thought, you know, maybe closer to 7, maybe over 7 million. As it is, you know, you're not going to complain about 6.6 million viewers on cable in 2025, but certainly I was expecting maybe more than a 2% increase over Indiana-Boston a year ago, given all the hype and given the fact that the Knicks were such a tremendous draw against the Celtics in the previous round. But that kind of gets to the problem for the NBA as we head into the Final Four. I mean, the Final Four is underway, obviously. There's not a lot of good options in the finals. And I do feel like this is shaping up as another year where the NBA is going to have to deal with the same litany of, you know, social media provocateurs, because I just don't look at this remaining field and see very good potential in the television ratings. Armand, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I was thinking about that when Indiana took Cleveland down in the prior round. I will say I agree with you also on the expectations of at least a 7 million viewership number. It was a wildly entertaining game. I mean, superb action, and it was even refreshing to hear the Inside the NBA crew talk about just how entertaining the game was. There was not a lot of talk about, oh, there were too much of this and not enough of that. There was a lot of talk just about how wildly entertaining the game was, how frenzied the crowd was at Madison Square Garden, and how that atmosphere adds to really the enjoyment of the game. But I think there is some reason to be concerned because they're coming, right? The naysayers, the opportunists, they are coming. Any any dip in the ratings, and they're going to come in mass. So I do think it's something to watch out for. I'm a little curious what you think, because even in game one of Dallas, Minnesota had a higher number in the Western Conference Finals than Indiana, New York in game one here in the East on TNT. Why do you think that part is, John?
Well, I mean, that's curious to me as well. So I generally try to do conference to conference comparisons, but network to network is fair as well, because those are the exact same windows as a year ago. So exact same Wednesday night TNT window, Mavericks Timberwolves had 7 million last year. I don't really know what I would make of that, because Mavericks Timberwolves did start really strong last year, stronger than would have been reasonable to expect. It was only down a little bit from Lakers Denver the prior year. So it might be that last year overperformed. I do think that the Timberwolves had a lot of hype surrounding them coming off the beatdown of Denver in game two of that series, not even game seven. Once that game two result came in, everyone thought they were going to go to the finals. We were going to have a new era led by Anthony Edwards. And they won the series, and then it kind of immediately flopped. But I think that that was a lot of what drove last year, because I don't think it was Luka. I think Luka is a draw, but I don't think that was because of him. If it was, we would have seen better numbers in the finals. So last year might just be kind of a bit of an outlier. But nonetheless, I mean, the fact is, Pacers-Knicks, you should be doing better than Dallas-Minnesota.
I'd agree with that. I was thinking as you were talking, because you had a seven-game series and the Denver-Minnesota conference semis last year was pretty compelling. Granted, you had some strange moments and some strange results, but to get a seven-game series, and then there was this momentum and this talk, as premature as it was, all this talk about is Anthony Edwards, the next Michael Jordan, and the next face of the league. I do think some of that intrigue played into why Dallas, Minnesota got the number it got last year. The other thing I was thinking about as well is the East Finals started kind of cold, considering the fact that it's been a while since we've seen both these teams. I don't know how much of a factor that played into it with Indiana taking care of Cleveland. You know, I don't know how much warmth you need, sort of heat, I guess is the better word. How much heat going into the series you need, and maybe that played a factor in. And then, of course, New York takes down Boston, but it felt kind of hollow because the game was a blowout. I don't know, but I agree with you. I thought it would have been a better result from a viewership number standpoint than what we saw in game one.
Yeah, you make a lot of excellent points. I mean, let's start with what you just said about coming in cold. You do have Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, all off in terms of the Eastern Conference. But then again, having Game 7 on Sunday didn't help the Western Conference on Tuesday. So there's something to be said for maybe that being a bit of an overrated aspect, the number of off days. It is also true, you know, every single time New York and Indiana have played in the playoffs, in the conference finals, I should say, there are three prior meetings, ratings were down pretty significantly all three times. Now, some of that is because in 94 and 99, the prior year had Michael Jordan. You saw pretty steep declines for both the conference finals and finals in 94 and 99. But then even in 2000, you had all six games down from the prior year, same matchup. It was Pacers-Knicks both years. And all six games were down sharply. That's also partly because the NBA's ratings really started to go down with that 99-2000 season after the lockout year. So Pacers-Knicks might not resonate as much with people as we think. First of all, you can go back to last year's Game 7. Remember last year, Pacers-Knicks Game 7, what was it, by 6.5 million viewers? A really underwhelming number for a Game 7 involving the Knicks. Later that same night, Minnesota-Denver had 8.4 million on TNT. It might be the case that the interest level in Indiana-New York is not what people might think it is based on how great those series have been. And it also might be the case that the interest level in the Knicks is not what people think it is nationwide. obviously the energy for the Knicks in New York is spectacular. But realistically, the two times they made the finals in the 90s, the ratings weren't just down big from Jordan. They were objectively low for the time. In 94, some of that's because of OJ. But between 94 and 99, you're talking about series that have a lot more in common with Detroit, Portland in 90 from a ratings perspective than with anything the Bulls did, or even Houston, Orlando, you know, and certainly I think there's an argument to be made that the Knicks' drawing power is a bit overstated.
It seems like, especially with Tyrese Halliburton's choke gesture, and I guess tribute, if you want to use that word, to Reggie Miller's gesture in 1994, it seems like Halliburton's leaning into the Reggie Miller role here. And of course, I mean, and we wrote about it in On the Air, so take a look at that column on sportsmediawatch.com if you haven't seen it. But how much of that Halliburton factor, that Halliburton effect, that villain effect, do you think, John, could maybe impact the ratings? It seems like Halliburton is sort of, and he's done some stuff with WWE as well, and it seems like he's leaning into this villain, this heel role. And I wonder what you think about how much that could sort of generate some heat and some extra interest in this series.
Well, certainly, you know, a good-natured villain is always an asset, particularly when he's talented, right? And particularly when he is talented offensively. So that's different than Dylan Brooks, you know. When it comes to Halliburton, he has all the ingredients to be a featured player in the NBA and a star. But, you know, it's going to be difficult for him to get to that point playing in Indiana. This is only the second postseason, I think, that he's been in, period. But obviously, if they go to the finals, then, you know. And let's talk about the finals, because this could be a finals that makes Rangers Diamondbacks look like the Super Bowl, right? It's going to be difficult, because I don't think the matchups are the problem. The matchups, any bad matchup can be made up for. But this is not going to be close. Oklahoma City is too good. And they're going to probably go 8-2 combined across the conference finals and finals. 5 games each. Sounds about right to me. I'll be happy to be wrong, and maybe even I'm jinxing them. I hope I am jinxing them, because I would like to see a competitive NBA finals that goes 6 or 7 games. I don't really care who wins. If it's Indiana, Oklahoma City, and it goes 7, that's fine. But if it's Indiana, Oklahoma City, and it's over in 5 games, I don't think this series can match up to Denver-Miami at all. Denver and Miami was the worst-case scenario a couple of years ago, but it was two relatively large markets, two top 20 markets, an established star in Jimmy Butler who'd been to the finals before, a multiple-time MVP in Jokic who had played the Lakers a couple of times, so people knew who he was. And it was still the worst-case scenario. But the other thing, too, the NBA had way better momentum coming out of that 2023 playoffs. And even though this year's postseason is the second most watched since 2014 behind only 2023, the reality is this has not been a 2023-style postseason from a viewership standpoint. So if it's OKC 4, Indiana 1, or God forbid, OKC 4, Indiana 0, it's going to be ugly, I think. It'll be a field day for all the usual suspects.
We are really hoping Minnesota presents some sort of challenge for Oklahoma City for obvious reasons. Number one, it's just more entertaining. But number two, it could perhaps give some momentum to Oklahoma City to see them at least struggle a bit against Minnesota going into the NBA Finals. I was struck by the viewership number for Minnesota-Oklahoma City because it was the least watched conference final game in 4 years, and that was 2021 when they were playing the conference finals in the finals in July. And so I did not expect, I thought maybe the appeal of Anthony Edwards would do enough to get Minnesota OKC game one relatively close to that 6 million number for the viewership, but it did not really get close. And of course, it didn't help that Oklahoma City was absolutely just destroying Minnesota all night long. I do think, as you said, there's cause for concern a bit, because if Oklahoma City, I know Charles Barkley called it the finals, the Oklahoma City Invitational, I think is what he called it. But it certainly is looking like that. The level of dominance we're seeing from OKC, while it is thrilling for Thunder fans, doesn't necessarily make for terribly enjoyable television or a great viewing experience.
No, you're absolutely right. So let's start with fact number one. They blow teams out. They win by 51 mm-hmm. to start the playoffs. They win by 43 in that Denver series in game two. They win by 26 the other night in a game that was close until they blew it out. So they blow teams out. You're going to have, if they make the finals, no matter who the opponent is, you're going to have at least one game that's a 30-point margin. That's unattractive. They play a style of basketball that irritates people, just like the Celtics. The Celtics played a style of basketball that annoyed people. They hit the three-point shot. They just jack up a bunch of threes. It was very good to see the Celtics fail at that strategy because everyone hates it. Well, now you have a different strategy that everybody hates that is getting success, which is the foul baiting, right? And so that irritates people. They don't like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and they don't like OKC. And so they're also a really small market team. That's number three. They have a lot of strikes against them right off the bat. They could make a good villain, but a good villain doesn't just beat up on everybody. A good villain has to be, you know, beatable. And that has not proven to be the case yet. That, to me, is the biggest problem. The NBA has parity in the worst way. It has the worst kind of parity there is, where every single year a different team wins easily, right? It's not the kind of parity that women's college basketball has had, where you have five or six teams that every year could win and you don't know who it's going to be. But, you know, it's not random. It's not random, and it is competitive, right? That's the combination you need. You need it to not be random, and you need it to be competitive. The NBA has randomness without any competition. Every single year, it's a different group that just runs through the playoffs easily. Boston won all four series in five games last year. Denver didn't go through a single difficult team. And even though they went six with Phoenix, that was because of incredible offense by Durant and Booker. They easily won all other series. You go back to Golden State in 22, finals was reasonably difficult, but the journey there certainly was not. And if you go back to 21, it's probably the last time you had a really competitive, you know, a champion who had a tough time would be Milwaukee. And then even in the bubble, the Lakers won all their series in five, except for the finals. Led 3-1 in every series. I mean, it's not been good. You look at, say, oh, any team can win. Well, every single year, there's a different world beater. That's not parity, right? It's just randomness. Parity is anyone has a chance to win. Every year, there's only one team, really, that has a chance to win.
I was looking as you were talking, and it just struck me. We haven't had a Game 7 in the finals since LeBron and Steph in 16. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. It's a pretty long streak. You know, the NBA is prone to these kinds of streaks. So in 11 years between finals game sevens between 94 and 05. So this is not at that level yet, but it is getting close to a decade. And the difficulty is every time you get to the finals, it's a complete mismatch. Right? And we have not had a game six in the finals in 3 years. And I would be very surprised if Oklahoma City was playing in one.
Yeah. And that's the point I was about to get to. We haven't had a game seven since 2016. And I would be shocked if we got a seven game series in the finals this year with the way Oklahoma City has been playing. It really does seem like it's just in the cards this year for Oklahoma City to win the championship and to win it convincingly, despite some of the issues that fans have with the way Oklahoma City plays, and in particular, the MVP of this season, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
None of this is a problem if Indiana can continue their magic. And, you know, maybe New York wins. Though I will say this, I do not believe that New York or Indiana, whoever gets in, matters if OKC wins easily. I don't think there's a meaningful difference between OKC 4, New York 1, and OKC 4, Indiana 1. So we'll see what happens. I do think that for the NBA's sake, I don't know. What do you even say about where the NBA's been? One of the difficulties in talking honestly about the NBA is that very few people talk honestly about the NBA because people want to tell you that the NBA is dead. They want to tell you that the NBA is less popular than hockey. It's like, these are insanely ridiculous, easily disprovable things, right? So you can't really have a real conversation about the NBA because the ground on which you're debating is fundamentally ridiculous. But I will say this. Since LeBron James went to Los Angeles, the NBA's had a really difficult time putting together a compelling product. It's had a really difficult time getting multiple teams to be good at the same time. I kind of look at that 2019 offseason, not even the one where LeBron left, as being really kind of disastrous because it was the offseason. Anthony Davis goes to LA, Kyrie and KD go to Brooklyn, Paul George and Kawhi team up in LA, and none of it amounted to anything. And what we've had instead of really great teams playing at the highest level has been a lot of injuries, a lot of underachieving, a lot of really bad moves by general managers, and just no really great teams. Golden State won one. It was a total one-off. I think people thought it was going to be the restart of the dynasty. Clearly wasn't. It was just a random title that they won. The Lakers, they won in the bubble. I'm not going to be one of those idiots saying that the bubble is not legitimate. The bubble is legitimate. But obviously, it was a complete anomaly. It was a one-off. Milwaukee, again, another. I mean, the teams that are winning titles aren't even getting past the second round the following year. They're just dominant the one year, and then they don't do it again. So it's, the league really has had a very difficult time putting together anything compelling. And can I just add one more thing? I enjoy what Indiana's doing, but my thought with an Oklahoma City Finals this whole time was, okay, we get to the finals and it's OKC versus Cleveland or it's OKC versus Boston. At least I don't really know who would win. Those are three great teams, over 60 wins, should be competitive, should go seven. I know who's going to win if it's Oklahoma City, Indiana. And again, I hope I'm proven wrong. I don't think I will be.
Yeah, I agree with so much of what you just said. It's not parody, like you said. It's like passing the dominance buck, right? It's like, okay, now it's your turn to run through everybody in the playoffs and then, or run through the finals. Now it's your turn to have a 5-game gentleman's sweep. Now it's your turn. And you want sustained dominance. You want teams fans can get used to, fans can learn to hate, fans can learn to really be invested in. But you also want to see teams who are legitimately challenged for long stretches, because that's where you get your tension and your drama. And we're just not getting enough of that from the NBA in this window of time.
Ryan Gillespie tweeted yesterday that the Pacers-Knicks game was something we've been waiting for since 2016. And I was thinking to myself, oh, you know, that's a bit of an overstatement, isn't it? But then I thought to myself, what have been the great memorable games since Game 7 of the 2016 Finals? I mean, obviously the Kawhi Game 7 in, you know, Philadelphia, Toronto, obviously that. And then what else? What have been the great games? You know, do you remember the old Sports Center top 10 games that they do at the end of the year, every year? What games these past several years would have made that special?
Maybe the Kevin Durant foot on the line.
That's true.
Conference semifinals, right? Game against the Bucks in 2021.
Yeah, that was a very good game. And then the Lonnie Walker game for the Lakers, you know? I mean, it's been...
I don't know.
Do you know what the scores have been? The margins of victory have been in the game sevens in the second round lately? Okay, so Oklahoma City plus 32. Mm-hmm. Indiana plus 21 against the Knicks last year. Boston plus 24 against the Sixers. Dallas plus 33 against the Suns. Boston plus 28 versus the Bucks, same day in 2022. Those have been all the second round game sevens since 21, except for one. I forgot. Minnesota over Denver was plus 8 because of the comeback win. Second round game seven, by the way, is one of the best ratings games that the NBA has generally, right? You know, outside of the conference finals and finals, and sometimes ahead of conference finals and finals. And you're just, I mean, it sums up where the league has been really, on so many levels, wouldn't it be great to just go back to 2019 and start over? And just, and not just on the NBA, but on everything. My goodness. I mean, it's been a complete cultural disaster since 2019 ended. Since, you know, not to go off on a tangent, but I will say this. I'm somewhat superstitious. I tend to believe that the first thing you hear about in a year or a decade kind of sets the tone. David Stern died the first day of 2020. And that to me was just like, that's not a good omen. And it's just been, especially for the NBA, but just also broadly, it's been, we got to get this decade over with. You know, people don't usually look forward to turning 40, but for me, turning 40 means 2020s are over. So I am ready for that.
And I'm behind you. So I don't know, man. I see what you're saying. And the Celtics Heat in the East Finals, was that 22?
Yeah, it was. But you know the weird thing about that? Because you never think the announcers matter. Mm-hmm. Because Breen and Van Gundy, well, Breen was out due to COVID and Van Gundy was clearly sick. And so that game didn't feel right because of that.
Yeah.
Even though it was a great game.
You're right. But it adds to the overall experience. I don't know what to say about the NBA. We've had this conversation a few times. I keep saying it because it's the best way I can describe the league. But and these conference finals are another illustration of it. The league's in the hallway, and it's like we got to get into a room at some point and start rocking and rolling, because until then, we're just not settled. And I would like to see the NBA sort of land solidly, and maybe it won't happen until after LeBron and after this generation of greatness is out of here, the LeBron, Steph, KD era. Maybe that's what it is, but it feels like the NBA has not landed solidly on its feet. And it really feels like in some ways the league has been in a haze since that Game 7 2016 NBA Finals series. Things have just not been settled. And so hopefully we'll get back to that point at some point relatively soon.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only. Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
But you know what's really fascinating? Is that Game 7 in 2016 was the final game of that particular media rights contract.
Mm.
That 2007 extension, that was the final game of that. So literally everything we're talking about here, well, not literally all of it, because LeBron was still in Cleveland, but pretty much all of it begins with the 2014 TV deal that began in the 2016-17 season. That deal that resulted in the big cap spike that allowed Kevin Durant to go to Golden State. And look, Kevin Durant did ruin the league. He did. I mean, there's no question. It's just not been the same because the NBA had found the perfect scenario. LeBron had gone to Miami, but he was back in Cleveland where he was drafted. Durant is where he's drafted. Golden State is organic and just people who were drafted there. And if you run back the 2016-17 season and you have a competitive defending champion LeBron in Cleveland, Golden State looking for revenge, and Oklahoma City looking for revenge as well, that is storybook. You have an incredible situation of the ideal parity where you have multiple really great teams, all of whom have an equal chance of winning. But instead, you get the Durant Warriors. And what was it worth? 2 years where you knew who was going to win from the start and nothing else to show for it. I don't even think Durant really gets much out of it because it didn't help his reputation. And it was just kind of downhill from there. And then LeBron goes to LA. And look, I mean, it's a weird conversation, a kind of a weird tenor of our conversation coming off of such a great game last night. We're taping Thursday. But this is going to be another year where the finals is averaging probably not even 12 million viewers, like maybe 11, maybe 10, maybe 9, maybe 8. You know, OKC, Indiana, with OKC having the very strong possibility of just blowing Indiana out, that could be bubble level. You know, I hope I'm wrong, but I mean, to me, it's going to be good to see a 9 in front of the viewership figure if OKC wins a game by 26 or 27 points. And eventually, you got to get out of this rut, right? The NBA's been in a rut. Now, where did the rut begin? Did it begin with Durant going to Golden State? Did it begin with LeBron going to LA? Did it begin with Kobe Bryant's death? Honestly, I mean, did it begin there? Did it begin with March 11th, 2020 and the season being postponed? Maybe it began with that weird thing in China. That was kind of the beginning of conservatives deciding, oh, the NBA, you know, like, I don't know where it began, but it's got to end. Maybe this new media rights deal will be where that happens.
Let's hope so.
All right, we spent a lot of time in the NBA here. Let's quickly hit some other issues, and we'll start with some news breaking as we're taping Thursday night. Disney is suing YouTube, according to Andrew Marchand of The Athletic, for trying to hire ESPN executive Justin Connolly as its global head of sports and media. Connolly was under contract. In fact, he was actually, according to Marchand, at ESPN's launch last week of the new direct-to-consumer product. So, interesting. According to Nielsen, in the month of April, YouTube had a larger percentage of viewers, 2+, than the entire Walt Disney Company. This is YouTube. YouTube, which, I mean, obviously, they've got a wide variety of content. Every single major organization has videos on YouTube. There's also a lot of AI-generated straight-up lies on there that people just watch and believe. I've been asked multiple times by loved ones, hey, did Clint Eastwood die? No, he didn't die. You saw a fake video showing that Clint Eastwood died, but he's actually alive. I've been asked this multiple times, by the way. That's a digression. But the point is, YouTube, obviously, it's a threat. This NFL game on YouTube in week one is one of the most significant sports media events in a long time. Because you say, well, why is YouTube showing this for free? Because if YouTube gets a bigger audience for that game than the NFL usually gets, and I think that is entirely possible, right? Because think about it. If Peacock got 15 million last year and people had to sign up for Peacock to get it, YouTube, which people just go to, that could potentially outdraw what you normally see for a Sunday night football and Monday night football. That's a huge game. The Chiefs are in it too, which also helps.
I'll confess, I'm on YouTube every day. Every day. I'm checking out YouTube, not just every day, multiple times a day. And I read, according to Nielsen data, you can back me if I'm not right on this, John, but YouTube accounted in April of 2025, 12.4%. of total TV and streaming minutes in the United States. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what I was referencing earlier, more than the Walt Disney Company.
It's something when you hear that and when you see that, This Connolly thing is interesting, like you said, not because of him only, but because of what this signals. And it's going to be interesting to follow. You know, we've talked about sort of these mile markers in the history of sports and streaming and the marriage of the two. You had the Amazon moment, which, interestingly enough, was the same matchup to start Thursday Night Football, right? Chiefs and Chargers. Yeah, and it's going to be Chiefs and Chargers for YouTube. That was a mile marker. That was a milestone moment, right? This could be massive, John, because like you said, YouTube is so ingrained within how we just operate now. That's where all the podcasts are. That's where all the content is. That's where music and all of the things, the shorts and so much bite-sized and long-form content. People just go to it. It's second nature. And so to have YouTube be a part of that in a now sports context just really blows everything out of the water and could really cause major sort of disruptions to how the networks and how these established media organizations have been doing business for decades. And so if all of that is sort of at play here, it would make sense for ESPN to look at this decision, which apparently is already official, right? It was reported. Yeah. They already announced his signing. It would make sense for ESPN to say, hold your horses here. Wait a minute. We're not certain this is what we want to see happening here. So especially considering the fact that Connolly was at the upfront event. Was that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is monumental, John. And I don't think it can really be overstated how important it is that YouTube is really starting to not just dip a toe into this, but really starting to get ankle deep at least.
Well, look, hey, let's be completely real here. If YouTube works out, it shifts the entire ground. If YouTube finds a way to operate as basically a broadcast network, not one that is, you know, I mean, YouTube has never been big on subscriptions. YouTube is free. They make you pay to get it without ads, but YouTube is an ad-supported platform. It's not a subscription service. If all of a sudden you can rival a broadcast network in terms of advertising revenue for the NFL, you know, then maybe you try to go get, you know, I mean, let me ask you this. YouTube versus Fox or CBS, what's an easier place for all generations to access for the 1 o'clock NFL game?
YouTube.
Yeah, because that's the other thing too. YouTube is for demographics that don't know what Peacock is. They don't know. I mean, YouTube is for demographics that don't stream. They're watching YouTube. They don't know what's streaming. So if this works out, and I mean, I could see YouTube really getting a shocking viewership number for that week one game, then all of a sudden those NFL rights become interesting. The next set of negotiations.
Definitely something to keep an eye on. And as I said, and as you said too, YouTube, everybody connects to it. Everybody understands it across generations. It's easy to access. It's easy to understand. It's easy to manipulate. It's easy to get into. And because of that, it makes it very attractive, at least it should, to any sport, to any professional sport, to any entity that's looking to expand its reach. And this is really going to be something to watch going forward. When we get that Chargers Chiefs data, and I'm sure you'll be able to break it down better than anybody, when we get that data, it should tell us a lot about where things could be in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. Let's shift gears and talk a little bit about a few endings. There's a lot of things ending right now. The NBA on TNT is ending. Around the Horn is ending. We're taping Thursday. It's ending tomorrow, Friday. And SportsCenter from Los Angeles ended on Monday as well. You know, this was such a taken-for-granted little show, and I say that I don't exclude myself. I watched SportsCenter LA on Monday for the first time purposefully, probably ever. I mean, I've seen it before in terms of, you know, leaving the TV on, but seeking it out is a rarity. And it was interesting because, you know, all I could think about was the passage of time. And I mean, no offense to Stan Verrett, Linda Cohn, Neil Everett, but, you know, you realize, wait, I've been watching these people, and certainly in the case of Linda Cohn, for 2/3 of my life. Eventually, they're going to stop doing what they're doing. All of these folks are still in their career primes in terms of this industry, you could work relatively late in life. But Stan Verrett is going to be leaving ESPN. And it's understandable, because I'm sure when they went to Stan Verrett and said, okay, Stan, you've been out in LA for 16 years, move back to Bristol, he probably would have laughed at that suggestion, right? I think anybody would. So he's going to stay out there in LA, and there's a lot of opportunities for him. He could do Fox, certainly, if he wanted to. And then there's also local. You know, one of the fun things they said at the end of the SCLA the other day was, I think it was Neil Everett who said it was like the biggest local sports station in America. And there is still a lot of local sports in America. And if you can get to be the sports director, for example, of an LA affiliate, that's pretty good. But there's a lot of those ESPN voices who you do kind of take for granted, who are kind of heading out now toward the end of their careers, at least certainly at the end of their careers at the ESPN. Sometimes you can not realize just how much time passed until they set the clock for the expiration there.
We're moving away from the Stan Verretts and the Neil Everetts and the Linda Cohns, and we're moving into the Pat McAfees and the Shannon Sharps and the Stephen A. Smiths. There was a time when it mattered, I mean, really mattered, for you to be on SportsCenter. And it really mattered if you had that 11 p.m. spot or that overnight spot. It mattered. It was, SportsCenter was a career maker for so many people. But it's a different era. It's a different time. I will always remember Stan Verrett, because I think, if I remember correctly, right after John Saunders passed away, he hosted ABC's College Football before they eventually settled on Kevin Nagandy. And he did a fine job. Stan Verrett is a solid anchor and host. And it's just an interesting time, because, as you said, there's no way he was going to go back to Bristol. He even posted on X, he said, my life is in Los Angeles now. And I'm thinking, even with all of the other layoffs we've seen from ESPN, the Susie Colbers and so many people who have either not found work or who have not found work in television, ESPN's lost a lot of really good talent of late. Trey Wingo, Kenny Mayne, all these people, like you mentioned, Mike Golic Sr., these really strong personalities who have made great contributions to ESPN over the years. But it's a different day. It's a different era. And Around the Horn is included in that, John. You've got to move the needle in a way now that allows you to be relevant in ways that we did not ask of talent 15, 10, 20 years ago. It's a different day. And Stan Verrett and that SportsCenter in LA no longer fits the day and the time we now find ourselves in, at least in ESPN's mind, until these decisions have been made.
Let me ask you a question. You know, one of the things, they started out SportsCenter LA in 2009 with Stuart Scott. And when they aired the final episode the other night, they showed the Stuart Scott Open, which also had a shout out from Kobe Bryant in it. If Stuart Scott had lived, where would he be right now in terms of his career? Would he still be doing SportsCenter? Because to me, he's the SportsCenter anchor, maybe even more than Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann. I feel like it's impossible to imagine that he would still have been doing SportsCenter in 2025.
You know what? I think I agree. I think it would have gotten to a point where he would have been doing a sports-specific show, like an NFL Live or an NBA Countdown, and maybe looking to be the like an anchor or the face of their coverage. Maybe like a Mike Greenberg, how Mike Greenberg is now.
What about Scott Van Pelt?
Yeah, that too. Gosh, you got me thinking now. What would Stu be doing? What would they even know what to do with him in this way? Because Stuart Scott did have journalistic skills and an ability to report. I mean, he used to do sideline reporting for the NBA Finals for quite a few years, if I recall, especially when Hubie Brown was doing their color back 20 years ago or so. Dan, I really don't know exactly what he'd be doing, John. He wouldn't be offering hot takes. He wouldn't be on a First Take, or I don't see him doing that. I see the love that Stu just had for the games and for presenting it and informing people in an entertaining way. it's hard to see him fitting in that debate TV context.
Well, remember, he got into a lot of trouble on social media or on the blogosphere for saying, don't boo. You remember that? I mean, that wouldn't fit with that. To me, you wouldn't see him anchoring a two-person sports center. He might have a Scott Van Pelt version. I don't think he'd be in sports TV at all.
Okay.
I think he would have moved on to something bigger, maybe on a network, maybe covering something outside of sports. But I just don't think there's no sports center anymore. It's not there. Yeah, it's on the air, but everybody's gone. Kenny Mayne's gone. John Anderson's gone. I mean, it's old hat. It's just not something that you're going to see. I mean, I don't want to say that because you also have two people who've been on this podcast. You have Randy Scott and Gary Streisky, who've been on this podcast before. They have kind of that old school dynamic. You have Hannah Storm still there. You have Jay Harris still there. You have David Lloyd still there. David Lloyd, who they gave an ESPN news show to. If you ever hosted your own ESPN news block, you have been an ESPN for a very long time. So there's still a lot of vets there, but it just feels like it definitely was noticeable that I was watching something whose time had passed, watching that final SCLA episode.
Feels anachronistic, doesn't it? Just does not feel like it belongs in 2025. Gosh, you said David Lloyd. I started thinking about, you remember the Hot List?
Yeah,
with Brian Kenny?
Yeah.
My goodness, we are going back, my friends. Yeah, it's pleasant to remember, but it doesn't fit in today's context.
No. So you had the Hot List with Brian Kenny, and that led into David Lloyd's show. But I don't remember the name of David Lloyd's show. But they used to put programming on ESPN News. They used to put Stephen A. was on ESPN News with that ridiculous Kwame Brown rant. Like, they had their own separate studio and graphics. They put a lot of effort into it, and then that ended too. That is enough of us. We've gone, obviously, the actual podcast won't be 90 minutes long, I'm sure, but we've talked for 90 minutes. And thank you for listening. Thank you to Armand, as always, for joining me. And we'll be back with more stuff down the line.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number. Not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.